Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I've run a few technical problems with our recording this week, unfortunately. The first time in years, thankfully, but it does happen every so often, no matter how many backups we make. So we had a big chunk of our episode this week cut out. A real shame, but we've worked hard to try and get as much back as possible and got enough to let you hear us revel in a brilliant comeback win for United. Plus, there's an interesting chat about Edinson Cavani's controversial Instagram post with South American football journalist Simon Edwards and a bit of a preview of PSG and the usual youth loan and women's roundup. So plenty still to enjoy. Thank you for your patience and sorry it's not quite the usual flowing episode, but enjoy the show nevertheless. El Matador leads a brilliant Manchester United comeback. A weekend on which to smile. United move up to eighth in the table and a win in our game in hand would take us to third after a difficult start to the season, perhaps. That is surprising. It could all change next week, of course, if United have been one thing this season. Well, it's inconsistent, but for now, some celebration and a smile. A good win against Istanbul Basaksehir midweek and a brilliant comeback against Southampton. The under-18s had a good win as well. Your regular youth loan and women's roundup on the Manchester United weekly podcast is in the middle of the show. Well, I'll tell you about that 4-1 win thanks to a hat-trick from United striker. Jack, let's begin with Cavani and Southampton. I think we'll talk specifically about El Matador and his impact off the bench in a second. But first of all, this United team might be consistent, but even down at 2-0 at halftime, you felt we had a chance. And unlike some recent United teams, I do believe in this team, and I did on Sunday. And I think that's a testament to the self-belief that Solskjaer has instilled in this United team. They've gone behind in all four Premier League away games this season and yet won all four of them.
Yeah, I agree. I think there was a lot made about this United team maybe not having much mental strength and not being particularly strong after the Spurs defeat, the 6-1 at Old Trafford, which to some degree was understandable given the nature of that defeat. But I think actually this United side is very mentally strong and has shown a lot of character and a lot of resilience, not just in the last few weeks, but in previous seasons as well. I think the big thing that you notice, for all his faults as a manager and as a tactician that we and others have picked apart, the one thing that you really cannot argue with about Solskjaer and his time as Man United manager is that he has improved the togetherness and the unity in this squad just so much. The attitude of the players is such a stark difference to what it was under previous coaches. And you can see it just in the celebrations when after Cavani scored the winner, you know, the way the team all runs over to the corner with Cavani and sort of dives on him. Maguire stayed back to give him sort of an extra congratulations as well. You can see that this team is together working as a unit. And I think it goes a long way to improving how we're able to respond to setbacks like we did against Southampton. This team has a lot of faults. I think we all know that. But I think actually its resiliency, mental strength, and most importantly, togetherness as a team is 100% there.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I guess part of the reason that we didn't panic, and I certainly didn't, and it is because the first half as a performance was actually fine, and it was individual quality that was the problem. And we were 2-0 down. Southampton showed two moments of great individual quality, a constant brilliant set-piece delivery from the corners all day from Ward-Prowse, and that was the case for the Bednarek opener, and then a brilliant free kick that, to be honest, De Gea did well to get to, even if in the end he ended up crumpled in the corner of his own net. And Southampton had that individual quality, United had lapses in it. In their own half, around their own penalty area, Fernandes was guilty of conceding possession too easily. Fred gave away too many silly fouls around the box, and Ward-Prowse scored from one of them. And then the other end, Greenwood, Fernandes, and Rashford all should have scored. And so those individual mistakes made it appear to be a poor performance, but in reality, the setup worked fine. So I guess that meant that you thought United actually only have to do a little bit better to go and win this game. And that's exactly what happened. We'll talk about Solskjaer's changes at halftime in a second, but Cavani, reminiscent of Robin van Persie. 8 years ago, we were at St. Mary's. And Van Persie scored a hat-trick for a 3-2 win. And it was the world-class movement and clinical finishing throughout. He proved his worth at Southampton. The first goal, evidence of great anticipation. The deflected shot from Fernandes comes in and Cavani throws his body towards it, converts it. But it looks, when you watch it, as if he always thinks the ball is coming to him. And I guess that's what makes a great striker. And the second also a header, but this time because of brilliant movement off the shoulder of his marker. And the celebration was as emphatic as his second header was. Worth his weight in gold just for this game alone.
Yeah, there was a lot of scepticism and I think maybe some worry among United fans and others about the Cavani signing. You know, we didn't really know what we were getting in a mid-30s player who had just been released and hadn't been picked up for months during the transfer window. And he has been starved of opportunities up till now, but I think the Southampton game, the second half, showed exactly what he provides to us. And it is that ability to come in and provide just something completely different to what anyone else in our squad is able to provide. The big thing with Cavani, I think the sort of phrase and the term that they're a natural goal scorer and just have the instincts of a goal scorer is a bit of an overused cliche normally, to be honest. But I think in this case with Cavani, it really does apply because he does have that knack of just understanding where to be and anticipating where the ball is going to drop. You know, for his first goal, you see Van der Beek, for example, doesn't really move when Fernandes picks up the ball, but Cavani is always on the move. He's always going into space and he ends up ghosting into that little area around the edge of the 6-yard box and just flings himself at it. It's not a particularly pretty goal and won't go down in sort of any compilations of Edinson Cavani, but I think he actually deserves a lot of credit for his movement there. And the movement for his second goal is just sublime. I mean, he starts that run across the front post before Rashford has really even taken a touch. You know, as the ball is on its way out to Rashford, Cavani is already making his move towards the front post and gets a great header on it.
Yeah.
That ability is something that very few strikers ever have had. You know, Van Nistelrooy is probably the only one that I can think of in my lifetime at United that has had that knack to just understand where the ball is going to drop and the ability to just direct the ball towards the goal. It doesn't really show up very easily, but I think when you go back and watch replays and watch highlights, you see that movement coming after you've watched it in real time, and it is very, very difficult thing to master. Cavani's not perfect. He definitely was rusty in the first few games and hasn't had too many opportunities, but that was a great example of exactly why we signed him and what he can provide to us.
Cavani, it's worth mentioning the assist for Bruno Fernandes as well, the quality of the cross, the game intelligence to recognise that the defenders, who I think were Bednarek, was the one right next to Bruno Fernandes, that Bednarek would be anticipating a cross coming in for Fernandes to head. And instead, Cavani recognised that because he was anticipating that, he could kind of put it behind Bednarek into Fernandes' feet and he'd have all the space in which to score. And it was the perfect cross to do that. It was right at Fernandes's feet. The weight of it was perfect for Fernandes to control, and it was another great finish from Bruno. It's expected almost for me from Cavani. At the very start, I wouldn't have said he's going to come in and look this good, but his kind of cameo performances against Chelsea, Arsenal, and in the Champions League, his movement is just, it's so good to watch. And it's so different to any of United's other strikers who like to take people on. And it's refreshing, and it's not a criticism of the rest of them, but honestly, it's just, it puts a smile on my face watching Cavani play, even in the games where he hasn't scored two goals and assisted one, even in those 10 minutes where he's come off the bench in previous games. He's just really good to watch. I'm not going to get carried away, and I think it would be wrong for Cavani to be United's starting striker because of his age, given the talent in Martial, Rashford and Greenwood, and the fact that has to be nurtured and they have to be given the opportunities. But an interesting read, I think it was either ESPN or The Athletic talking about Cavani's Ronaldo-esque fitness work ethic and how well he keeps himself, and Solskjaer spoke about it after the game as well, saying he's so meticulous in his preparation. He knows exactly what he wants to eat, how he wants to train, how he wants to work out, and that means he's the kind of the ultimate professional, which is fantastic to hear. And if he can have even two more games like that, one more game like that, then 1 year at United will quickly turn into two for Edinson Cavani. Now, I said in the start, United have been very inconsistent this season. There's no getting away from that. And I fully expect us to play West Ham at the weekend and lose 3-1. We have now played four of the six teams above us, including a few at home, but a couple away as well. We've had difficult trips to Everton away, Southampton away, and somehow are not in a terrible position in the league. And again, it can change so quickly, but it's just a bit comforting, isn't it, to recognise that we're not that far off where we want to be, and we are 5 points off the top.
Yeah, it's quite difficult, I think, at times for us to keep the perspective, and I don't necessarily blame us or fans in general for getting, you know, very critical of this team at times. I think they've deserved it good portions of the season.
Agreed.
But it is always important that we do keep some perspective about where we are, because for all the doom and gloom that we've had through the first sort of 3 months of the season, if we win our game in hand, which again is not a given since this team has been so inconsistent this season, but we win that game in hand and we're suddenly only 2 points off top, which, you know, doesn't look particularly bad at all. And it is important that we try and keep that perspective, because ultimately we are still picking up a few points. We are, I think, on a bit of an upward swing now. The performances haven't been perfect, like at West Brom last weekend, but things are, I think, looking up. I think one thing that's really important as well that we often forget is that this trend that we've seen in the last few years of teams winning the league with 100 points or almost 100 points and only losing, you know, one or two games all season, that isn't normal. You know, that is an outrageous amount of points to be getting in a season. You know, City and Liverpool setting that standard so high in the last few years, that isn't the norm. And I think it's made us all so much less tolerable for a bad result here and there. You know, most teams until the last few years were winning the league with points in the mid-80s. Some teams have won it with points in the 70s before. So when you take that into account, us having a few bad results at the start of the year, although obviously not ideal, is not the end of the world as it has been in previous seasons. You know, you think about Liverpool last season winning every game to start the season. At this point, we'd already be 14 points behind them. And as it is, we're five with a game in hand. And so that honestly makes a massive difference. I don't think we've changed that much from last season so far. But the top teams are kind of coming back down to more normality, more normal sort of points totals rather than this ridiculous standard that's been set in the last couple of years.
Right, Jack's recording went up into heaven and died an unfortunately very silent death here, so any noise would have been nice, but there we go. I've got a few more thoughts, so forgive the occasional jump, but some more analysis on the win against Southampton salvaged as best as I could from me. And then you'll hear from Simon Edwards, a South American football journalist who's based in Medellin, Colombia. I spoke to Simon about Edinson Cavani's Instagram post on Sunday evening, and then after that you'll hear your usual youth loan and women's roundup, and then a short preview of the PSG game on Wednesday night.
Yeah, two or three more things to pick up on. Firstly, Solskjaer decisive with his changes. That has certainly not always been the case. I think we've complained on here many a time about him delaying too long, waiting to respond to the game for too long. Not sure whether the Greenwood for Cavani change was tactical or whether Greenwood pulled up with something or felt something during the break. Perhaps he did, because Cavani didn't seem to be completely ready for the second half. But either way, it was decisive and game-changing. And more of that would be nice. It's not the first time in recent weeks either. The away game at PSG, he changed the system and it works brilliantly. United closed out the game better than we normally do and went on to get the winner. Very nice to see. Donny van de Beek, first Premier League start. I think I and many, many other people were delighted to see that. And like Cavani, van de Beek's great to watch. His movement is a problem, a thorn in the side for the opposition. And just the efficiency of his passing is great. He had fewer touches and made fewer passes than van de Beek, Rashford, Fred, Matic, Maguire, Telles, all of these players. But when he, in those fewer touches, he manages to do more. He just gets United's tempo up a bit more and combines really well at times with Fernandes. There's one thing that perhaps could do some work on it. And I think the Van de Beek Fernandes partnership could be brilliant together. And their play in the final third is good, but Van de Beek's always looking for that cutback from the byline. And Fernandes normally kind of holds deep in the box rather than moving for that Van de Beek pullback. And if they can work together to kind of get that pattern of play happening more regularly and make more use of it, they could be a really fearsome pairing. Obviously, they can't start in every game together. It's very dependent on the system. But played the game together on Sunday against very good opposition and did very well. And Fernandes as well deserves credit once again. Gives away the ball too much still in his own half. That's kind of part and parcel of Bruno Fernandes, it seems. It's kind of as if he plays the same game all over the pitch, which can lead to problems in our own half. And he does give away the ball too much, and it makes Fred's job a little harder as well. But he still always provides. And you take the last goal, for example, the Cavani winner. Fernandes tells Harry Maguire to get into the box as he's taking the free kick. That kind of distracts the Southampton defence. Fernandes passes it out wide to Marcus Rashford, and suddenly there's a whole new set piece going on, and then Cavani has the space in which to score. Fernandes with the first goal himself, a brilliant finish, and he just continues to deliver and deliver. And I do think that you've said Fernandes and Van de Beek should be the default. I don't know if it's necessarily the default already, but it should certainly be the aim to have them starting together. It should be the objective for Solskjaer is to have a team in which both of those players can play. But other than that, my final point on the game would be some praise for United's fullbacks, Wan-Bissaka and Alex Telles, both of whom offered a pretty sizable contribution in attack. Wan-Bissaka with a couple of nice moments and some nice skills, which is certainly something he's added to his game. And Telles just causes panic in the Southampton defence, and that provides so much to United's game. And one just nice bit of news, Marcus Rashford. This is reported by the Manchester Mail. Marcus Rashford in private donated a decent amount of money to Rocky's, the chicken shop in Withenshaw, opposite to where he grew up. And that was in order for the chicken shop to be able to hand out free meals after school to the kids from the nearby estates. That wasn't published until the Manchester Mail reported it this week, but just a really nice gesture. And the fact that it was done in private doesn't make it even nicer, but shows that it's not about the publicity for Rashford. Okay, joined by Simon Edwards, who's based in Colombia, in Medellin, and was looking on as the Edinson Cavani, I can't quite call it a saga because it was a very short one, but the basic situation was Edinson Cavani wrote Gracias Negrito to a friend who congratulated him on his two goals against Southampton for United. Cavani quickly removed the story and apologised quickly to United, have said he understood the possible connotations and was very apologetic. And this is kind of what you and many other South Americans or South American based people were saying, Simon, as soon as the story broke. Could you explain why you and quite a few others, to be fair, were so quick to explain that there was no kind of malintent in Cavani's note to his friend, and why Negrito should not be seen as racist?
Yeah, look, I mean, I won't pretend that there isn't racism as a serious issue in South America, and it's a different issue. There isn't the same context. You know, if you look at an Anglo world, a lot of the words related to race are very potent, understandably, for historical reasons. There's a lot of ways you can express racism in English. And that isn't to say that in South America there isn't a big problem of racism. It's far more casual. It is an issue that needs to be addressed. But the language of race doesn't have anywhere near the same connotation. Negrito is negro, which just means black. There's no connection between negro and other words in English that have similar meanings. Even negro has a very different connotation in English. It literally just means black. And ito can mean small or little, but it also can be kind of a term of affection or a term of endearment that you add to a word. So I might be Simoncito if someone wants to express endearment, express kindness or connection to me. They might call me Simoncito. And in terms of how these racial terms are considered in South America, without the context of these words being used within, as part of slavery, as part of this power dynamic, they really don't have that connotation. Of course, people can express racism and demonstrate racism, but the words themselves are very much neutral. Mm. So negrito is very much a term of endearment. People consider race and talk of race in the same way as they would talk about many other physical characteristics, you know, ginger or big guy, little guy, that kind of stuff. So if you take away all of the ways in which race in an Anglo and in a European context is discussed, then hopefully you can begin to understand how these words don't have that connotation. If you want to express racism, you would have to use further words, because negrito is something, you know, my girlfriend would be negrita or negra in her family. She's kind of brown-skinned, but if she's with lighter-skinned people, they might call her negrita affectionately as the darker person in the group. I, for example, am regularly called mono or monito. Mono is a Colombian slang meaning monkey, or it's how someone would refer to as the light-skinned person. It's interesting, but that's a particularity to Colombia. But what I would say is, with a very different context, these words don't have anywhere near the potency. So I understand England, of course, because of all of the history of these terms and terminology, yeah, and how race has been discussed historically, that these words are very sensitive. But really, in a South American, Spanish language context, these words have no negative connotations in and of themselves. They can be used to be discriminatory, but in and of themselves, he's just saying to his mate in the most natural way. You would hear commentators on the television using the word negrito constantly, newspapers, TV programs, magazines, because if you take away that racist connotation, then they're just a way that South Americans speak very casually about race, as they do with many other things, without that negative connotation.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Absolutely. Because I was very surprised when I was in Colombia for a couple of weeks in 2019 and for a bit longer in Buenos Aires, and I was called gringo, mono, blanco in Argentina, and in Vaso as well in Buenos Aires, which obviously is not related to skin color or characteristic, but just being British. But there is that kind of everyone has a nickname in South America that isn't necessarily to do with their character, but more to do with their appearance. And I was coaching football with kids in Buenos Aires, and there was no holding back on Gordo or Flaco. There are plenty of nicknames. I was very surprised at that when I was there, and it's certainly a different culture. Do you think there's a place in English football for making sure, because while I think understanding that context is important, the message, because it's that message is going to an English audience.
Yep.
I think for me, I think it's still important to try and avoid it, if that makes sense. Because the context isn't in the message itself. Do you think how do you think you can get around that issue by kind of trying to stop that message being misconstrued so that it encourages, or not encourages, but facilitates kind of casual racism in England while not kind of imposing it on a completely different culture and language?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. Look, all I would say is, for example, if I was Cavani's agent, I'd be like, mate, just avoid that. You know, people will jump on it. But for me, what's important to understand is these things can be misconstrued. People can misinterpret them, and I understand why. The language of race is very toxic often in English, in a way that it isn't in South America. So I would recommend avoiding using any sort of racial terms, because they can be misconstrued, and there's a lot more baggage for an Anglo culture with these terms. As I've said, we could talk for hours and hours about racism in South America, and it is a problem. But the words themselves don't represent the problem or don't manifest the problem. But what I would say is it's something that maybe players should look to avoid just because it can be misinterpreted. But my call is to, for an English audience to, because my issue is that the often what happens is as South Americans try to explain the differences, and it's a tricky thing to explain.
Yeah.
We come from a very different context. We don't see these words in a negative way. Often what happens is the English response will be, they don't even know they're racist. But these guys are trying to excuse it. And that is something that's tricky. So what I would say is, to avoid any controversy, probably best to be careful when speaking Spanish in these terms in front of an English audience. But also for the English fans to understand that there is a very, very different context, and these words do not have that negative connotation. So I think a bit of understanding from both sides would help. A bit of care taken by the South American players to avoid any controversy, and an understanding that just because a culture has a different attitude to terms of race, just because these words don't have the negative connotations, which is a result of history and slavery and all of the things in the European context, doesn't necessarily mean that this is coming from an inferior or a more backward place. There are lots of things I could complain about in terms of race in South America, but the comfort and the lack of toxicity in the language of race, I would say, is a good thing rather than a bad thing. And again, I understand why it's problematic in English, but I think if people, if all of the words related to being black in South American Spanish are neutral, I would say that's a good thing. Whereas the reason these words have so much power and so much baggage and so much toxicity and negativity in English is for historical reasons of racism and discrimination. So I think an understanding that from the South American perspective, that these words have power and potency in English that you should be aware of, and understanding from the English audience that the reason these players are more comfortable with these words is that their relationship with race and racism is different in South America. Not necessarily worse, in some ways worse, in some ways better, but these words are neutral, and I think that comes from a more positive place largely.
That's brilliant. Thank you very much for doing that.
No worries, man. Yeah, it's just a case of, it's so difficult because part of me wants to go, yes, South America is full of racism that I want to shout and complain about. But this is one small part of it where it's like, no, this actually isn't the problem. There are lots of problems that we can look at, but the fact that people are comfortable discussing race, and that every word to describe someone's race isn't a negative word, like that people aren't tiptoeing around these terms because they haven't been used to insult someone ever, is actually a good thing. But there we go. It's tricky.
Manchester United under-23s were beaten 2-0 by West Ham on Friday night. Facundo Pellistri was in action again. He was on the bench for United's Champions League game against Istanbul Basaksehir. Didn't get on for his debut, but it will come soon. He started life slowly, admittedly, in the under-23s, but is now looking confident. Took players on regularly against West Ham and would have won a penalty in the second half were it not for a poor refereeing decision. He certainly wasn't confident enough in those first under-23s appearances, but he is now. He got an assist last week, and that will give him a good confidence boost. It has to be remembered that he is a young man settling into life in a new city where a different language is spoken. Arnaud Puigmal and Antti Elanga were both great as well. Puigmal has 6 goals for the under-23s already. He's been versatile, confident, consistent this season, probably United under-23's best player alongside Ethan Galbraith. And Elanga, well, he can improve his finishing and does need to, but when he does, those cutting sides from the left flank will be unstoppable. The pace and the anticipation is already there for United's Swedish winger. The under-18s, meanwhile, thrashed Middlesbrough 4-1, a Dylan Hugovev hat-trick. I was impressed by the fullbacks, Logan Pye, United signed him from Sunderland in the summer, and Mark Gerardo, he was on the right, and United signed him from Barcelona in the summer. Both of them were good, as was Isaac Hansen-Aaron, the Norwegian signing, 16-year-old, as was the fourth goal scorer, Charlie Savage. So 3 goals from Hugovev, 1 from Savage, and a very comfortable result for United that takes them to the top of the under-18s Premier League. In low news, Diogo Dalo was a very late sub for AC Milan in a 2-0 win against Fiorentina. Elsewhere in Serie A, Andreas Pereira played 14 minutes in a 3-1 loss for Lazio against Udinese, and Ahmad Diallo Traore had a good cameo for Atalanta against Verona with some good touches and runs and decent passing from the United signing who will join the club in January. James Garner in the Championship, well, his corner for Watford was flicked on by Craig Cathcart and then finished by João Pedro for Watford in a comfortable win for them against Preston North End. No minutes for Dylan Everett in League One this week, who tested positive for coronavirus, and Joel Pereira was also not given any minutes but was on the bench. Mate Kovar played for Swindon, Tees Chong came off the bench for Werder Bremen, and there were a few performances scattered elsewhere for the rest of United's low knees, but no action for the women's team this week, who play Aston Villa on Saturday away from home in the Women's Super League. Jack, PSG, this is a game that should feel bigger than it is, and I think doesn't, because there still won't be any fans at Old Trafford. Fans are slowly starting to return in small numbers across the country, but there won't be any at Old Trafford for now, with Manchester still in Tier 3. But the PSG game still is a big one, very important in terms of the Champions League group, a win for United, and that's kind of it, you would think. That then would not require too much after that. But a lot of questions to ask. Axel Tuanzebe is suspended, so it'll look like it'll be a Lindelof and Maguire defence. But as Michael Byatt, one of our patrons, asks, he says, does Henderson start against PSG? Does Cavani start? Do we play a diamond? What do we go for? Lots of options. I'll leave you to dive into them first before I respond.
I reckon Cavani will probably end up starting. I don't think he's going to be our long-term first-choice striker at all. The likes of Rashford, Martial, Greenwood are all much more integral to our future and therefore will always take the priority in terms of starting. But I do think that Cavani has probably earned the right to start, since none of those other three are in particularly great form at the start of the season. And it'll obviously be a slightly emotional night for Cavani playing against his former team. So I expect him to start, honestly, and I think he should. That hold-up ability that he has, I think, is going to be key against PSG, because like the last game, I expect us to spend a lot of time without the ball during the game. And I think his ability to be a bit of a target for us will be really helpful. In midfield, Solskjaer has seemed to default back to the diamond recently, which I expect him to go with again against PSG. We played it for portions of the game at the Parc des Princes and it worked really well, so I'm expecting us to go with that again. In terms of the personnel, I reckon it will be Fred and McTominay, because that has seemed to be the personnel that he sort of goes to in games where we don't have the ball for a large portions. He seems to prefer that extra mobility in midfield, which is understandable. And I would be surprised if Van der Beek and Fernandes don't start alongside them in midfield. I think that partnership deserves a chance to flourish, and I hope we see a little bit more of that against PSG.
A win against PSG would be brilliant, not just for winning against PSG, but it would send United through. And then we were talking about resting players like Bruno Fernandes. Then the Leipzig game would give us a chance to rest those players and spare them a trip to Germany. I don't think we will beat PSG. I can see a 2-2 draw. I'm also concerned about the West Ham game. I think a draw at best. I'm certainly more confident about this United team now that Cavani is settled in and showed his quality, now that Greenwood is back, now that Van der Beek's getting more chances. Those three players in particular, and Alex Tellers as well, actually. Those four players kind of give me more confidence going forward. We're going to wrap things up there for this episode of the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. For more from us throughout the week, you can find Jack on Twitter at
UTD Tate, TAIT.
You can find me on Twitter at Harry Robinson 64, and the podcast itself is at UTD Weekly Pod. That's POD there. You should go to that Twitter at UTD Weekly Pod if you want information as to how to sign up to Patreon and support the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. If you sign up and become a patron, you can listen to bonus Q&As at the end of every show, as our patrons are just about to do now, where we're going to talk about players United shouldn't have let go, how often Cavani should be playing in the starting lineup, and talk a little bit about the Mike Tyson fight. And one question from Ted, who says, which two sides from history would you want to see battle out a 0-0 draw? Ted's gone for United 99 against Barca 2011. We'll be giving our opinions on that as well. But for now, if you want to sign up for that, go to @UTD Weekly Pod on Twitter. But for now, have a great week. Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.